Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Whoa, we got some fun stuff going on around here. Twins, 7 straight wins tomorrow at Tampa. They'll be playing on the Wolf. The Wolves will be playing on the CCO against Memphis in Game 6. Joining us now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline, Trent Tucker's got a ring to his name. He knows how this stuff works. Ran into the health club yesterday. So we got to talk about this, Trent, because this Game 6 is too important not to talk about. Not just too important this week or this season, but in the big picture, the Minnesota Timberwolves organization. If they could find a way to win this series and forget what they do against Golden State, what that would do for this franchise would be transformative. And you don't get very many transformative kicks at the pianata, as they say. Trent, were you ever down 3-2 and came back and won a series that you recall?
Yeah, 1990, I was down 2-0. And at that time, the first round was best of 5.
Oh.
And we were playing the Boston Celtics. And the first 2 games in Boston, they blew us out. We kind of looked into the playoffs, not playing well, not a ton of confidence, team not connected together. So we go to Boston for games 1 and 2, and they probably beat us by an average of 25 points or more. We go back to Madison Square Garden for game 3. Everybody thinking, well, you know, it's just a formality. You know, is this thing is going to end tonight, okay? And Kenny Walker, who is not known as a three-point shooter, we up by 2 and what about, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 seconds left in the game. Shot clock's running down. He throws up a three-point shot from 25 feet, knocks it down. We go up by 5. We win the game by 3. Now we go into game 4. All of a sudden, we got new life. We got confidence. We feel better about ourselves. The Garden is alive. We blow out the Celtics in game 4 by 25 points in Madison Square Garden.
Now you're going back to Beantown, huh?
Now we're going back to Beantown for a decisive game 5. At that time, only 4 teams had ever come back from being down 2-0 to win the playoff series in the best of 5. We beat the Celtics in game 5 by 12, 14 points on the home floor.
Really?
And, you know, that shot Kenny Walker makes – we get confidence. We come out in game 4. You thought that we were the best team in the NBA. And then we go to Boston. It's a nip and tuck game. I think I hit a 3-point shot to put us up by 3 in the 4th quarter. And we never looked back from there.
Now you're playing against the former Gopher, Kevin McHale, right?
Yeah.
And Larry Bird, of course. What was it like for you?
And Dennis Johnson.
And Dennis Johnson. But what was it like to play against McHale when you played with him for the Gophers?
You know, it's...
Or does that wear off real quick?
Yeah, and you knew how good he was. And you knew that he was going to be a load for us to deal with. But it was nice to play against him because he said, hey, you know, here are two guys who played together at one point in time. and they both were good enough to make it to the next level. So that shows exactly how good our team was when I played for the Gophers.
Okay, so now here come the Timberwolves against Memphis. I was out there today, and Chris Finch is very frustrated that his team doesn't rebound better, offensive rebounds in particular. In fact, you know, John Morant almost looks like a hockey player sometimes, like just get a shot on net, and then if I miss it, there'll be somebody there for the rebound in the basket. Sometimes that's what it looks like he's playing out there. But that being said, the question that I asked Chris Finch today is rebounding about length or is it something else? And then he said it's about toughness, having tough dudes that are willing to punch first. We don't see as many seven-footers, Artis Gilmore, McHale, that kind of length anymore. What is rebounding about, first of all? Can you rebound well with a small lineup?
It's about technique. It's about when the shot goes up, and I was taught this from early days on as a basketball player. When the shot goes up, the first thing you do, you locate the man that you're guarding.
And box him out.
Locate him first, box him out, and then go find the basketball. What happens to a lot of kids in today's game, when the shot goes up, they lose sight of the man they're guarding. They follow the flight of the basketball. So then they walk into a space not knowing where their man is coming from, and then all of a sudden the offense player, you know, gets a running start in the open lane to get to the offensive glass. And then when it becomes a jumping contest, more times than not, he's going to win that battle. So it's all about technique. It's all about fundamentals. It's all about going back to the basics. When you play at this time of the year, it's the small things that will get you beat. And if you lack fundamentals, if you lack technique, that's how you can lose a playoff series.
Brandon Clark, what does he do? Because it seems like, and there are certain guys like this, Bobby Jackson used to be like this, you can't explain, why is the ball always coming off to him? What do you see from him?
He's active. He chases, he tracks the ball down because there's nobody blocking him out. So when the shot goes up, he understands where the ball is going to come from, off the rim, if it's a miss. So he gets a running start. So he has a clear vision of where the ball is going to go. And the guy that's guarding him has no sight, has no awareness, has no sight of where he's at. So when you get that running start, he's already athletic. So now he gains that one step advantage that he needs to get in position to offensive rebound.
Okay. The second part of this is, and all the players seem to I mean, they echo it. It's an echo chamber, but nobody does anything about it. They call it, you know, hero play at the end of games. Everybody wants to be the hero. And they're taking the ball and they're deciding they're going to decide this thing, and they end up with a lot of bad shots. Why not just call plays in the last 2 minutes? And I know that even if you call a play, and I asked Chris about this as well today, that you still have, the point guard has the option. So if he thinks he can get to the basket, like D'Angelo Russell the other night, and you end up with a terrible shot, you still have that as part of the option, even if you call a play. But can't you call plays that require movement and passing at certain parts of the game?
You should be able to. I mean, you know, do the Wolves have a go-to play, you know, in the last 3 to 4 to 5 minutes when they're trying to hold on to a lead? Do they have plays they can call where the best player now is in a position to touch the ball, you know, where he puts the defense on notice? You know, I saw, you know, in the fourth quarter of game number 5, when the Wolves were trying to hold on to the lead, Karl Anthony Towns was standing in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
D'Angelo Russell was going one-on-one. Anthony Edwards was going one-on-one. Other guys were taking crazy wild shots as if they were down by 10 or 12 or 14 points. And when you're trying to hold on to a lead, or you're nursing a 8 to 9 to 10-point lead, now you have to come down and execute. You have to know where you're going to go with the basketball. And in the fourth quarter against Memphis, especially in game number 5, the Wolves had no idea where the ball was going to go.
You hear this about Towns, that he wants to post up too high, that he needs to go low from time to time and then either draw contact or make a play. But that's just not his nature. He wants to bring it out. He doesn't want to go low block, so to speak, in the traditional sense that we know. Does he need to go lower sometimes?
Well, the play designed for him to catch the ball out high. You know, they run pick and roll, right? Where's he set the pick at? He set the pick at 28 feet, so he can't get down low.
You can't get low from there.
No, so he pops out to the mid-range. He catches the ball to 15, 17 feet. He never starts on the basket. There are no cross screens. There are no down screens. So in the game today, primarily, the big guy, if he's good offensively, he's always setting the pick and roll. He's picking and popping. You very rarely see a big guy pick and roll to the basket or a guy catches the ball on the block. Karl Anthony Towns, when the game is on the line, they should have some sort of play where there's a cross screen for him where he comes from one block to the next block. He catches the ball. Now if the double team comes, he can locate Mike and see where the double team is coming from.
Okay,
so now you got guys who are in a position where they can catch and shoot. You know, when you have your perimeter player with the shot clock running down and they have to dribble the basketball four or five or six times, that's going to end up to be a bad shot. Only so few guys that I've ever seen, you know, throughout the history of basketball, are able to take five, six, seven, eight dribbles and beat the defense and make plays. Those guys are far few in between. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, maybe Elgin Baylor. But we don't have that guy on our team. Now, if Karl Anthony Towns catches the basketball and you come with the double team, he makes a kick-out pass to Anthony Edwards, now the defense guy decides, do I run and take the three-point shot away? He can ball fake now and get into the lane off of one or two bounces and make a play going to the rim. He doesn't have to take more than two dribbles. If the play is set up right and force the defense to – and once the defense has to shift, now you can find an open shot or you can find driving angles to the basket.
Trent Tucker is our guest. Jacksonville Jaguars are on the clock trying to decide who to make the number one pick overall for the second year. Trayvon Walker and Aiden Hutchinson, the two most off-mentioned names, both, one an edge rusher, but one's a defensive lineman from Georgia. And, of course, Aiden Hutchinson from Big Ten country in Michigan, who will keep you updated as this thing moves along, the Vikings with the number 12 overall pick. Okay, so D'Angelo Russell makes that terrible play the other night and gets a bad shot. What can a coach tell him? How do you control a veteran point guard like that to try to get him to do something different?
I would put Jared McLaughlin in the game with him.
Mm-hmm. At that time in the game, the last couple minutes, you mean?
Yeah, and put the ball in McLaughlin's hands because he's going to run the offense.
And then Russell becomes, and he is a skilled shooter, but he becomes a shooter instead of a decision maker.
There you go. And all of a sudden now, instead of him thinking that you're trying to show him up or you're trying to embarrass him by taking him out of the game.
He's still in.
You put the ball in the hands of somebody else who will come down and make the simple play. McLaughlin will make the simple play. The offense will stabilize when he's in the game. It's because he's going to go to the right place at the right time with the basketball. So now you get D'Angelo Russell off the ball, and if the ball swings back to him, now he's got the defense running at him so he can ball, get up under, or he can take the open jump shot. So now you give him options where he doesn't have to think too much or try to do too much to get a shot off.
All right, so you got the ball, and you got a tie game, and you're going for the win. And you've got McLaughlin, you've got Russell on the floor, you've got Anthony Edwards, you've got Karl Anthony Towns, and let's just say Vanderbilt's there for just in case somebody misses as a possible offensive rebounder. What play would you call?
I would go back to an old play that we ran for Bernard King back in the 80s. But the play called 42, okay? And what 42 was that point guard would take the ball in the wing, okay? Two guard would go down as if he was going to post up. He would go all the way across the lane on the other side of the rim and set the screen for the big guy to come across. The big guy doesn't move until the guard gets all the way across the lane. You're going to pick the man. If they switch, hold that basketball as the point guard on that wing, let Karl Anthony Towns stop in the middle of the lane. And if they force you to the block, now you catch the basketball. We got 10, 12, 13, 14 seconds on the shot clock. Now you got to catch the ball and turn low kick. If a little guy's on you, catch the ball, turn and shoot as quick as you can because Memphis has no one on their team. If Karl Anthony Towns catches the ball at 4 to 6 feet from the basket, they have nobody that can block your shot. He has wonderful low post moves. So, Mike, put him in a position to make the shot. Now, if you don't like that action, have the four guy come down and set a screen down on Anthony Edwards. You pop him up to 15 feet and say, go to work from there.
Okay, so if
that's a set play.
For the Timberwolves to win tomorrow, what has to happen?
For one, they have to get off to a good start because it's going to be the crowd is going to be energetic. It's going to be off the rafters in that place. Get off to a good start, but they know if they get off to a good start, they know Memphis is going to make a run. They're going to have to control. They're going to have to control their emotions. They're going to have to keep Memphis off the offensive glass. They're going to have to get to those 3-point shooters. And tomorrow night, my only major concern going into game number 6, did Ja Morant wake up after game number 5?
Uh-huh.
Because for 4.5 games or 4 games and 3 quarters, you know, he was not the player that everyone was talking about. And then all of a sudden, in the end of the third quarter, when he gets the big slam dunk and into the fourth quarter, he became that guy once again. Will he become that guy tomorrow night when he has a free game to play with? So I think that the Wolves are going to have to play a complete basketball game for 48 minutes, and Karl Anthony Towns is going to have to stay out of foul trouble for one, and then he's going to have to be at his best.
Trent, appreciate it very much. Always good to visit with you, my friend.
Anytime, Mike.
Trent Tucker. He's got a ring on his finger. He knows a little bit about the game of basketball. Hey, the first pick is in the books. Jacksonville made it. We'll tell you who it was when we come back. Welcome back. NFL Draft Night. Let's get you up to speed. The number one overall pick belonged to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Of course, they took a quarterback last year. They've changed coaches since then. And this year they went defense. Everybody knew it was between Aiden Hutchinson and Trayvon Walker. Trayvon Walker taken number one overall. Defensive lineman, good speed, good athlete, and then Detroit makes the hometown pick, Aiden Hutchinson from the University of Michigan. Of course, if you watched this year from afar, you saw his year. He broke his father's sack record. Interesting side note, his dad became a doctor and still is a doctor, an emergency room doctor, and he delivered his son Aiden when he was born, 11 pounds and 2 ounces. And his father was the doctor that performed the delivery. A side note, that's the interesting stuff that comes up during the course of the draft. And, of course, he had just a great year for Michigan. And they beat Ohio State and all those things that went with it. So now, Chris Tubbs, now it gets interesting.
Yeah,
when will the first corner go? Now, we know Houston's pick is in. We don't know who it is yet.
Yeah, this is where I think Vikings fans start to pay attention. Because the sooner that Sauce Gardner goes, then I think you start to see maybe a little bit more of a sense of urgency for Derek Stingley. And that, you know, if you believe in the Vikings absolutely needing to take a corner, that would be a worst case scenario for Minnesota and for Viking fans, if that's what you believe they should do.
Yeah, now I was told by people that know more about it than I on the inside that the conversations have really moved around. And the cornerback is not the priority position that people think. Not that they wouldn't take a corner if it presents itself, but they don't feel like they have to get a lockdown corner in the first round, and they would be comfortable taking Garrett Wilson or Jordan Davis, either one of them. Now, Derek Stingley ended up going, here we go. Here comes the run on cornerbacks, right? He goes third overall, the LSU cornerback that they were hoping might be with Patrick Peterson.
Ooh.
Both from LSU, and Peterson could take him under his wing. Obviously, you know, and probably the last month, it became pretty apparent that Stingley would never drop to the Vikings.
Well, I mean, his pro day just blew people away.
Unless you wanted to trade up, it was pretty apparent that they weren't going
to
get
Stingley.
You had to
make sure Stingley. That he was healthy.
Yes, and they're not going to get Gardner either. I mean, let's be honest here, unless they make a move. I can't see a scenario where he falls to 12.
No, not now. So
now you're left with McDuffie maybe as the next best corner on the board, and then you say, well, is that worth a 12 pick?
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, do you entertain a team like maybe Pittsburgh moving up or New Orleans wanting to move up? So, I mean, it all depends, too. I mean, what happens with Hamilton, the safety out of Notre Dame? I mean, you know, he's 6'4". He's like a unicorn.
Yeah, if you think he can be a real playmaker and a difference maker, and you can play him back there with his other Notre Dame guy, Harrison Smith, and you go, this guy for 10 years is going to be a dominant player because he's damn near a linebacker, you know?
Yeah.
But he plays safety, and we can move him around the field. If you feel that strongly about his athletic prowess and in his upside, you take a strong look at him. I don't know that he's that good or that gifted, but that's what you'd have to weigh against the rest of the field, I think. Is this a 10-year guy, right?
Yeah, and also, I mean, You've got Kevin O'Connell, who came from the Los Angeles Rams.
Well, this
who,
is the other the reason why they've had so many conversations about Garrett Wilson, et cetera, is, yep. is that people believe O'Connell wants three great receivers. Plus, they're going to lose, you know, Thielen or Jefferson. I mean, here we go. One of them's going soon.
Yeah, Thielen's getting a little, long in the. Do you end up trying to win games 41-35? I mean, is that you? Do you go Tecmo Bowl type?
You know, and I don't think you do, but I also understand that offensive coaches believe they can, and they love having the tools, especially if he's going to call the plays. They love having all the tools. It's just human nature. Mike Zimmer loved drafting defensive players. He loves drafting offensive players. They lobby for it, you know, et cetera. Now, Zimmer did not get his way the last three drafts. They took Darisaw, they took Jefferson, they took Bradbury. But in general, in free agent market as well, he always wanted the emphasis on cornerbacks and defensive linemen. Much more to come on this edition of Sports to the Max. It's draft night, but it's much more, and we service all of the above. Stay with us. All right, Amon Gardner goes fourth overall to the New York Jets. So two corners are off the table now, Stingley and Gardner. And I don't know. If the Vikings want McDuffie, he might be there at 12. Otherwise, I believe you begin thinking about another position. And you got to think about Jordan Davis some. I mean, maybe you like Garrett Wilson, but if Jordan Davis is there, you can move up or back to get him. You know, who knows? Jermaine Johnson from Eden Prairie, edge rusher. You could always use one of those, particularly in that 3-4 scheme. We'll see. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's got to make the calls. He's the new general manager. He had his press conference earlier this week. And he was asked, how many hours does he put in preparing for this in his new job, his new title as general manager of the Minnesota Vikings?
You mentioned the long hours. How many hours are you putting in? Are you here till midnight every night or your first draft?
You do whatever it takes to get your job done. I talked about my mom and my initial prep, my dad. You know, when they came to this country, my dad was a dental school and he's driving a cab, and my mom worked multiple jobs. You know, one of my closest childhood friends, a transplant surgeon who I want to say doesn't sleep for 2 days and then goes and operates on somebody. So I'm not going to be ever the one standing up here telling you how many hours I work doing something like this. It's just a privilege.
I get that, but I do not want somebody that's been up for two straight days to operate on me. And I have great respect for whoever that man is. And I get what he's saying. Really, what he's trying to do is set the stage. Here's page one for him. You know, how do you get the Minnesota Vikings to the next level? And let's be really honest about this. Finally, okay. We don't know if he has a clue. We really don't. We don't know if he has a clue as to how to run an organization or run a draft. We don't. He's never drafted before. He told me that he was on the phone in case people wanted to make trades the draft room last year. I mean, that's hardly a high-end position. So this is about him. This is about getting it right, and this guy having such great skills and being able to lean on other people that he can get it right. But it's going to be very difficult for him on his own accord because he never played football. Remember that. So he doesn't have that feel for it. So he's got to lean on a lot of people beyond analytics to get it right. Now, a big piece of what he's trying to do with the Minnesota Vikings is to get everybody rowing in the same direction. That's how he got the job. It was like, hey, we've got these culture problems. We need to fix the culture problems. And so he was asked how important this time has been since he took the job, bigger than the draft, to try to get the culture right in the front office.
It's been important. It's been probably my favorite part of what's been going on. You daydream when I was in San Francisco and I'm sitting in office long hours and what would it be like when I got here and, you know, what would we dress like? How would we start meetings? We play our morning song to get going and we do all these things that we do and you dream about and they're here and they're happening. And it's been special to be a part of. And I'm so happy that everybody here has responded positively to it. But again, you know, the culture is important. That's not just the culture of the personnel, but it's the culture that Kevin's building with the players and all of it. And it's been great. We like where we are. We like what we're building. By no means do we feel like we've done anything. We just got started, but we're excited about where we're going.
And you should be excited. But you know, you got this thing. You've got a lot of good players, a lot of pieces to the puzzle right now. But now now it's time. You make the decisions. You make the call. It's on you. You become a part of the record. It is who you are. Starting the night. And so he was asked, how does he manage risk? Say a high-end talent that's got some issues versus reward.
The risk-reward, in general, to your point, it is just, it's not an exact science, but it is something that you pay attention to. If there's a certain value for a player, yeah, there's got to be a discount for certain things like injury risk or things like that, but it's not this perfect, hey, it's 10% here or it's 5% here, or it's a round or of discount. It is kind of a, you know, an imperfect science, a little bit art and a little bit of math together, and I think that's where we thrive.
All right. We'll hear more from him throughout the night. The New York Giants are on the clock with the number 5 overall pick. Two corners already gone. Will there be a run on quarterbacks at some point in time, particularly if they're not picking up the option on Jones out there in New York with the Giants? Does that mean they've got their eye on a quarterback? I don't know. And I can't say that for sure, though. But I don't see the Vikings taking a shot at a quarterback in the first round. It's possible. You could see somebody there that you're just in love with and you go, yeah, I got to have him. But I don't see that happening with the Vikings, even if it's one of those people that you say, hey, not for this year, but for the following year. I don't see that happening, but I don't know. Because I don't think that Kevin O'Connell, when you got Dalvin Cook sitting there and Adam Thielen, those people, and Danielle Hunter, I don't think you want to sit and wait. Kayvon Thibodeau goes to the New York Football Giants out of Oregon. And good athlete, good feet, good skills, strong kid. He'll help him. He'll help him. I don't think he was on the Vikings radar or someone that they thought they'd get to. But that one's kind of expected. I'm waiting to see now if we get a run on quarterbacks. I don't know if we will or not. But Thibodeau to the Giants, the Jets have been in, so we're 5 picks into it. The Vikings are at 12, so we're probably about half hour at least or so away. All right, Kayvon Thibodeau, the last one taken in the NFL draft. He, Oregon edge rusher to the New York Football Giants, where Andre Patterson, an old friend of mine, will coach him, a defensive line coach there for the Giants, who came to Minnesota with Denny Green at one point in time, left us, came back with Mike Zimmer, and is now running the defensive line for the New York Football Giants, and he got what he wished for. That means if he lobbied for Thibodeau, they got him, because they got a very special edge rusher from Oregon who's athletic, can make plays. We'll see how that plays on the big stage. We're still waiting for quarterbacks to take a run. Right here on WCCO today, you heard earlier today, the Minnesota Twins won their 7th straight game. First time they've won 6 in a row since 2008, 14 years ago at the Metrodome. That's how special this homestand was for them. Now they go on the road to Tampa, but that's after winning 6 straight at home, 7 straight overall, and leaving here in first place. That's a pretty good day. After the game today, I went out to the clubhouse, and I talked to Rocco Baldelli about what this team is going through.
What's impressed you the most over the last week about this team? Because you've won a lot of different ways.
There's a few things. There's a few directions I could go with that. I think it's hard to not mention the way we've been playing defensively. It goes along with the pitching. The pitching's been great. But when the ball's been put into play, we've just executed. We finished plays. The ball's going in our glove. We're making good throws. We're making good turns. We're finishing a lot of outs, which is what we need to do in order to get where we need to be. But, it feels like there's a lot of things that are working well right now. I think we should be happy with the way we're playing, but we got to get ready for tomorrow and keep it going. But it's been fun to watch from where I'm sitting.
Is defense point of emphasis of spring training different, or is it Carlos Correa solidify a lot of things? What is it?
It's probably a few different things. I think we have a good mix of guys that are good quality defenders, guys that work every day out there on what they need to do. We've added some good defenders to the mix too, with Carlos, with Gio, and I think just the way that the group is playing together and understanding what everyone can do next to them, it's working.
There you go. Twins playing Tampa tomorrow. Rocco gets to go back home. In Carolina, they took a Carolinian. Carolina Panthers take a Kem Ekwonu, big offensive lineman out of North Carolina State. He'll step in there and try to play. They got a lot of needs out there. Carolina does. And so we were just talking, Tubbsy, about the, would they go for a quarterback given the fact that Sam Darnold's not going to be the man? And they really kind of lacked a lot of oomph this last season offensively.
They did. And I tell you what, with Malik Willis still being there.
Not far away in Liberty.
No, and Kenny Pickett, those are the two names right now. All of a sudden, Maxie, I think with those two guys both still being on the board, I think if the Vikings...
Want to trade down?
Exactly.
Yep, here we go, right?
Honestly, here comes the desperation.
That's where that 12 spot sits. If you know, right, and the quarterbacks are all sitting there.
Yeah, a team like New Orleans or a team like Pittsburgh.
And now you know you can still get Jordan Davis, or whoever it is.
Yeah, it didn't
you
break.
You might be able to make the move and pick up another draft.
Yeah, it might not work well if you wanted the corners. But, yeah, you've still very much got McDuffie could be out there. The options for trading down... Now, all of a sudden, I think that becomes more enticing.
Increase.
Because you can get some of those day two picks back that you lost. Mm-hmm. So here's a chance to recoup some of that and maybe still get one of those guys that you need.
Yeah, and Kenny Pickett, interestingly enough, played at Pitt, of course, and his coach out there, his offensive coach, quarterback coach, coordinator, is Tim Salem, who used to play quarterback for the Gophers, you know, Joe Salem's son. And so we had him on with us on Sunday with Pete Najarian and I talking about Kenny Pickett and how much he likes him and what he's done in his body of work. And it was because of Pickett's great year that they got a transfer portal quarterback from USC to come in this year because, you know, and this is funny, the ramifications of, right? You see Pickett, you go, if you can do that with Pickett, what can you do with me? So USC gets a new coach. Yeah. He goes, I'm coming out and play at Pitt because you can make me that guy. But Salem, and of course, all these coaches have nothing but glowing reports, you know, about the guys that might get drafted.
Yeah, and I mean, once you have a reputation as being the U of M with Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman, wide receiver, it's like all of a sudden, you know, Penn State, linebacker, you. So once you start to get a reputation, especially for quarterbacks, I mean, quarterbacks, that's where the big money's at. So, of course, you're going to follow that.
Well, and who's the most successful turnout quarterbacks in the last few years? North Dakota State.
Yep.
Go figure that one out, right?
Yeah, it's weird because we were talking about, you know, the, you know, Division I AA or the D2, however you want to, you know, look at just kind of how you
rank and project, right? What's the finished product? John Madden once said, he was asked, what's the toughest part about coaching? And he said, trying to figure out what the finished product looks like.
Yep.
We mentioned the Minnesota Vikings at 12. They're still a ways away. Jeff Robinson's going to join us. He sat in that draft room for years, has been active in the draft this year for different reasons. Pete Najarian, who just loves the draft, he gave me a layout today like you wouldn't believe of the options the Vikings have and why he likes who he likes and who he doesn't like. Meanwhile, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah has been trying to figure this whole thing out, and they go to the combine, these executives do, and that's where they get a chance that, they get all the analytics on them, how fast they're on the 40 and all that, but it's also their chance to do an interview with these players, these prospective players they're going to invest millions of dollars with. And I asked him, I said, what do you try to get out of those interviews at the combine that tell you how that player projects? Here's what he said.
First of all, we want to make sure that we use that data point in its, you know, in its contextual importance, right? So our area scouts and road scouts and national scouts, they've been scouting these guys for 2, 3, 4 years. And so that's a lot of information, a lot of anecdotal information from their coaches, strength coaches, and things like that. So I want to make sure that first and foremost, we're not overweighting a 20-minute session where they've maybe been 15 before us and they're 21, 22-year-old kids and they might be a little fatigued, and make sure that they might not be their best version of themselves. So I want to make sure we're weighting the importance of it. But after that, it's really just trying to see what's their why, what drives them, are they going to be able to operate in a professional environment. Do they have what's in them, or the want to, the desire to become the greatest player they can be? You know, we're trying to put a building together where everybody's going to be the best version of themselves. And are they going to fit in that culture? Those are really the main things we're focused on, but we're not trying to do too much with an interview like the combine.
All right. There you go. The Evan Neal, next taken by the New York Giants, again, defensive tackle. So Andre Patterson's getting his way out there. In New York. He's winning the lobbying sessions behind the scenes. He's got two defensive linemen out of this deal, an edge rusher and now a defensive tackle. So you can see where they think that their need is in New York for the players that they need. And he's one of those big defensive linemen you see that wears that Alabama helmet well. When you see those helmet programs where you just know he's one of those big guys, and you look at him and say, boy, he looks like a player. That was him when you watched him. It's like, okay, I can see Saban, what he's thinking here. He puts these big guys in, he lets them go to work, and he's one of those guys. And so he goes to the New York Giants. The Giants have had two picks. The Jets have had one. We still haven't seen a quarterback go yet. We've seen two cornerbacks go as we approach the Vikings' number 12 overall pick, which will be coming up here shortly. I mentioned the Twins won today 7-1. Bailey Ober pitched his 3 2/3 innings, had a little tightness, so he came out of the game, but he was effective, and he's learning what it's like to be a starting pitcher in the big leagues, and he's learning what it's like to play in a team that's suddenly in first place. I talked to him about both.
Bailey, how did that feel? Another good outing, another good starting pitching performance, and the beat goes on for the Twins.
Yeah, it always feels good to win, especially when you get to sweep an in-division team. Right now, I feel like we're playing really good baseball all the way around, from the defensive side, pitching, starting guys, all the way back to the back end and the relievers. And then our offense is obviously getting it done.
Are you a believer that starting pitching is contagious, that, you know, it feeds off each other?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it helps when you have really good relationships, and every day you're kind of trying to help the other guy and then using their success and trying to push yourself to go even farther.
How much confidence do you have in the defense behind you?
Oh, it's big time. It helps when you have some platinum gloves behind you.
Correa was pretty good again today.
Yeah, he's outstanding back there.
How are you feeling?
Pretty good.
How would you like to have Correa behind you, huh? That guy can pick it and go. He had a couple good plays. Jorge Polanco was outstanding last night. He had a great play. Makes pitching easy, as they say, although it's never easy. When we come back, Jeff Robinson scouted. This was his job for years. He worked the draft room. He's been engaged in it this year for a number of different reasons. We will look at the prospects that await the Minnesota Vikings and let him rank them. The Minnesota Vikings are still a ways from being on the clock. Then Pete Najarian will break down their pick in the 8 o'clock hour.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon an office so dreary, Wendy's HR presentation made everyone weary.
Was it a bore?
A snore. Could have used more charm, for sure.
That's it?
Wendy opened Canva, looking ecstatic. She began to work her magic.
Docs, prints, presentations galore. All in one design. Not dull anymore.
The next day, Wendy wowed the crowd. They clapped loud.
I feel so proud.
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.